reconvene. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. I apologize for keeping you waiting, but the days have started late. Oral argument ended late, and so we're starting a bit late. Call 03-0955, Jamie Peterson versus Volkswagen of America. Drew Cochran, Attorney Cochran's going to argue on behalf of Volkswagen, and Scott Cohn of Chicago will be introduced by Wisconsin Attorney Michael Briggs, and will argue for Jamie Peterson. Do you want to make the introduction now? And then we'll proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Michael Griggs. I represent the plaintiff, Jamie Peterson, in this matter. I'm here today to introduce Scott Cohen, who has been admitted pro hoc vice. Thank you. Scott Cohen is a member of the bar in Illinois and Indiana.
And in good standing.
Yes.
Okay, he'll be admitted pro hoc vice to make the argument today. Thank you, counsel. All right, we'll start with Mr. Cochran.
Thank you, and may it please the Court. There's one issue in front of the Court today, and that is whether the federal Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act applies to lessees. The facts of this case are not that important to the determination of this issue. It's undisputed that the plaintiff, Jamie Peterson, is a lessee. She leased a 1999 Volkswagen Beetle, and the Beetle was covered by a two-year, 24,000-mile limited warranty. Peterson subsequently claimed to have experienced some problems with the vehicle. She alleges that she offered Volkswagen the opportunity to repair the vehicle, and she alleges that Volkswagen was unable to do so, and she subsequently filed a lawsuit against Volkswagen.
Who did she lease the vehicle from?
According to the complaint, the lessor is North Shore Bank. According to the lease document itself, the lessor is the dealership. That becomes important because one of the essential elements of this case is whether or not there was a sale. And the sale in this case is alleged to be to North Shore Bank in order to facilitate the lease.
Who was entitled to enforce the warranty?
Excuse me?
Who could have enforced the warranty? The car warranty. Who could have enforced it?
Sure. There is a distinction which needs to be made between who is entitled to enforce the warranty and who is entitled to enforce the warranty using the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. Jamie Peterson is certainly entitled to enforce the warranty, and she can use a number of different remedies. She can use, for example, Wisconsin's Lemon Law. Wisconsin Lemon Law specifically includes lessees as persons who are allowed to bring a complaint under that action. She can also enforce the warranty under the state's Uniform Commercial Code. She can also enforce the warranty under other federal laws such as the Truth in Lending Act. Again, the Truth in Lending Act, which is a federal law, specifically includes lessees as persons who are able to enforce the warranty. So Jamie Peterson can certainly enforce the warranty. However, she can't enforce the warranty under the statute that she's trying to enforce it under the
Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. What about just under contract law? Can she enforce it against Volkswagen under contract law? Or does she enforce it against the dealer under contract law? Or isn't there privity of contract? There was a footnote in your brief that raised that as an issue.
The privity argument goes to the idea of whether she can enforce the warranty under an argument of an implied warranty. And we argue that she cannot because she is not in privity with Volkswagen of America. She can enforce the written warranty under a contract law document. Again, however, she can't enforce it under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. And this is why. And it gets a little bit confusing because we have to follow the chain of the statute. So I brought some visual aids.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I wear glasses. Well, so most of my I cannot read your exhibits.
For that reason, I gave you all copies as well. So I anticipated that might be a concern.
Before you get into this, I have a question regarding, because you raised the question of whether or not there was a sale. And I guess the question I have is that when the lease took place, did money transfer from North Shore Bank to Volkswagen to cover the cost of the car, or was the lease directly with Ernie von Schlader so that North Shore did not forward any money?
Sure. Again, the lease document itself is attached to the complaint, and the lease document itself specifically says that the lessor is the dealership and not North Shore.
That's not my question. My question is, did money pass hands from the bank to the dealership?
At the time the vehicle was leased, we don't know. The fact of the matter is, in almost every circumstance, there is a bank which is involved in the lease transaction, and I can assume that at some point North Shore Bank purchased the vehicle. Whether or not that occurred at the exact same time that the lease was executed, we just don't know at this point. So
you were conceding there is a sale. The question is whether or not the sale was such that it involved the act.
The record itself does not support the fact as to whether or not there was a sale. I can tell this Court that we know that, in fact, there was, and North Shore Bank did, in fact, purchase the vehicle at some point. We don't know exactly when that occurred. If this Court has trouble with that issue, and it is important to some degree because the sale has to be in connection with the lease. So if it doesn't occur until a significant time afterwards, I think there would be a question as to whether that sale has occurred in connection with the lease. What we would ask this Court to do is to issue some sort of advisory opinion as to how they would treat that issue and let us determine those facts.
Well, my question is this. If North Shore did purchase the vehicle at some point, then how can Jamie Peterson have a lease that continues with Volkswagen?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
North Shore, if you indicated that North Shore, in fact, purchased the vehicle at some point, you just don't know when, then how can there be a lease with Volkswagen?
The lease itself is not with Volkswagen, but Volkswagen of America, Inc. issues the warranty. So, and Jamie Peterson is assigned the ability to enforce that warranty. So she can, in fact, enforce that warranty. And again, we get to this question. She can enforce it under contract law, under the UCC, under the Lemon Law. She can enforce it under the Truth in Lending Act, but she can't enforce it under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. And here's why. The Warranty Act defines consumers three ways. First, that person has to be a buyer. All parties agree that she didn't buy the vehicle, that she is a lessee. So she's not what the courts have been calling recently a Category 1 consumer. The Category 2 and Category 3 definitions both require that there be a written warranty. Category 2 is any person to whom such product is transferred during the duration of an implied or written warranty. And 3 is any person who is entitled by the terms of such warranty or under applicable state law to enforce against the warranty or the obligations of the warranty. So both Category 2 and 3 require us to determine whether or not there is a written warranty in this case as that term is defined by the Magnuson-Moss Act. Now, the Magnuson-Moss Act then goes on to define written warranty two ways. And both of those definitions require that there be a sale. And both of those definitions require that that sale be to a buyer for purposes other than resale. Volkswagen's argument is, if you track that backwards, is that there was no sale because it's a lease. Because there's no sale, it's not a written warranty. Because there's no written warranty, she's not a consumer under this act.
That's why I came back to the question of the sale. You've indicated that there was a sale at some point to North Shore Bank. And correct me if I'm reading this wrong, but when I look at paragraph 3 of which defines consumer, any person to whom such product is transferred during the duration of an implied or written warranty. If the warranty was already in place and the sale then takes place, why doesn't that cover it?
Well, if the warranty is in place before the sale takes place, then there's no sale. And if there's no sale, the warranty is not a written warranty under the Act because that requires there to be a sale. If it all happens at the same time, and if this Court considers the sale to the bank to be the sale that is required for there to be a written warranty, We don't believe that that sale qualifies because it's not a sale to a buyer for person, or, excuse me, to a buyer for purposes other than lease sale. And the way we make that argument is because the lease gives Peterson an absolute right to purchase the vehicle. So if she has the right to purchase the vehicle, the sale to the bank can't be to a buyer for purposes other than resale because they, in fact, have to sell it to her if she exercises that option. And that argument has been the law of the land, or excuse me, the law in the Dicentio case out of the New York Court of Appeals, which is the top court in New York. And that was also the way that the Seventh Circuit determined that part of this case. The Seventh Circuit also determined that the sale to the bank, when the lessee has the absolute right to purchase it, is not a sale to a buyer for purposes other than resale. Now, that is opposite from what the Court of Appeals found in this case. The Court of Appeals found that that sale was enough to be a sale in order for there to be a written warranty.
Maybe I'm looking at it a little bit differently, because I guess the problem that I'm having is if the purchase of the vehicle was for purposes of a lease, then isn't that by definition for purposes other than resale? Because the purpose is lease.
No, and Dicentio holds that that's not the case, and Volker holds that that's not the case. Both of those cases specifically say that when the buyer, in this case a bank, has an absolute obligation to sell the vehicle, then that purchase of the car is not a sale to a buyer for purposes other than resale.
The bank may not be a buyer because it's going to resell, but what has that got to do with the ultimate buyer? The bank didn't sell to the plaintiff here for purposes of resale, if, assuming the lease is a sale. Have I missed something?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Consumer means a buyer other than for purposes of resale. The bank here was going to transfer this, right, by lease, right?
Correct.
If the transfer by lease is a sale, which you don't concede it is, right?
Correct.
Then the bank would not fall in as a consumer.
That's right? Correct, because the bank is also not a buyer for purposes other than resale.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate, suppose the bank, instead of leasing it to Peterson, sold it to Peterson. Would Peterson be covered under the Act?
I think at that point you would have a question as to whether the written warranty was issued in conjunction with that sale. And that gets into...
In connection.
Right, and that gets into a factual determination. If, for example, the warranty came into effect when the bank bought the car and then they sell it 3 or 4 months later, then we would argue that the warranty was not issued in connection with the sale because it was already existing at the time of the sale.
Well, the product is still a consumer product. Why does it have to be sold by Volkswagen or a dealer to fall within sale to a customer?
Because the written warranty requires that for the, again, we're talking about, we acknowledge there is a warranty with the car.
This is by a supplier. Is that your point? The bank isn't a supplier?
I would argue that the warranty would commence upon the sale of the vehicle to the bank. So if they subsequently sold it, then that the warranty would not be issued in connection with the sale from the bank to her because it would already be existing. Therefore, it would not be a written warranty in this Act as it pertains to Ms. Peterson.
But how could you ever get into the second definition of consumer then, one who has this product transferred during the term of the warranty? That obviously implies the warranty was ongoing before the transfer.
I think that we have asserted in our brief that if you get the vehicle as a gift or if you get the vehicle through the probate court, then you are being assigned the product during the duration of the warranty.
That's the only way?
Those are two examples to meet the Category 2
definition. Why would a Consumer Protection Act want to only protect folks that got things out of probate?
Well,
I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, it also protects the buyer. I mean, if Ms. Peterson were to buy the vehicle from the dealership, she would be covered under Category 1. So it's not just gifts and probate. It's also, of course, a buyer under Category 1.
Right.
And the question
But Category 2 is a very separate and distinct broadening of the statute. Otherwise, they would have stopped with Category 1, and Category 3 is a further broadening. In fact, you told us that she could enforce it under state Lennon law. Why doesn't that put her under Category 3?
Well, because the state Lennon law has a four-part definition, not a three-part definition. And the fourth
How about just state contract law?
I think that she could under state contract
law. Then why isn't she covered under Category 3?
Because this is a specific act that has a specific definition for written warranty, and it does not qualify as a written warranty under this act.
But what you're telling me is someone can be a consumer under this act, but cannot have the benefit of the warranty that the act is designed to protect?
That is absolutely correct. And I think you're talking about legislative intent to consumer protection. Well, the legislative intent of this act, and this is covered in the DiCintio case, is that a Professor Leary testified about this bill. And he said, he warned them that he did not think that lessees would be covered under this act, and they continued to enact it the same way that they have now. The Truth in Lending Act was enacted by Congress 7 years before the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. The Truth in Lending Act specifically covers lessees. Again, if Congress wanted to do that, they certainly could have. And in Wisconsin, the Lemon Law was amended in the late 70s specifically for the purpose of covering lessees. The three-part definition that used to be in the warranty, or in the Lemon Law, tracked the three-part definition here, and the state legislature specifically found it necessary to add a fourth part to include lessees. DiCintio was decided in 2002. Congress has known for some time that there are courts that do not believe that it applies to lessees, and they haven't done anything to change it. So,
well, but they're not bound by some federal court in one area. They're bound by the United States Supreme Court, just as we are not bound by any other federal court except the United States Supreme Court. So,
I agree, but I don't think that there's any legislative intent which shows that they meant to cover lessees. I don't think that as far as a consumer protection argument goes, there are numerous remedies available to Ms. Peterson other than this act if she chose to pursue them.
Right, but there is, in my view, it's very inconsistent to say that this is not a written warranty here, even if we can say she falls as a consumer under Definition 2 or 3. If I buy your theory, I have to say she only gets the warranty if she falls under consumer under Definition 1. Well, if that may be the case, why in the world would Congress bother to have those other two definitions? What purpose do they serve?
She is certainly someone to whom the vehicle was transferred, but she was not someone to whom the vehicle was transferred during the duration of this implied warranty because there was no sale. Therefore, it's not a written warranty. That's the distinction, and I understand that that's a fine distinction.
You're just totally writing out the second two definitions, then. We don't need them.
No, I'm not, because...
Well, when would they click in?
Sure. Say, for example, someone purchases a vehicle.
Okay.
That's a written warranty, because there was a warranty which attaches at the time of the sale when somebody purchases it. That person decides to give the vehicle to their daughter. The daughter has the vehicle transferred to her. She also has the warranty transferred to her because the warranty is in place. That would be a Category 2 consumer.
You just lost me. Are you saying that there was... I thought you were making a distinction between a written warranty and a written warranty under the Act. Are you saying there was no written warranty at all?
No. There was certainly a written warranty.
Okay, so we have a written warranty.
Yes.
We have at some point a sale, and we have at some point a transfer. But your position is a written warranty is not a written warranty here.
That is correct, because the sale in this case is not to a sale for a buyer for purposes other than resale. And again, I see you smiling. That's the same decision reached by the New York Court of Appeals in the Cintio, the same decision reached by the Seventh Circuit in Volcker. I don't think we're out on a limb on this. I think numerous courts have found that exact same reasoning to be applicable.
Illinois courts have gone the other way, however.
The Illinois State Court in Cohen, which was a Northern District of Illinois case, found the other way. They found that the sale to the bank does not... So now I'm going to get confused. they found that that constitutes the sale for purposes other than resale. We believe that that case has been overturned by Volcker, which is a Seventh Circuit decision. The Court of Appeals in this case relied on the Cohen case for its determination.
But Volcker ultimately held against you.
That's correct. What Volcker decides ultimately is that they're not a Category 2 consumer, but they are a Category 3 consumer, and the way that Volcker Court gets there is they find that this warranty here is not this warranty here. That's how the Volcker Court makes that distinction. They find that the definition of written warranty, it does not apply to the use of the term warranty in the third part of the consumer definition. We simply disagree with that. We think the statute quite clearly means warranty because it refers to written warranty and then such warranty. We believe that when you read the statute, it quite clearly means written warranty as that term is used in the statute. So we simply disagree with the Seventh Circuit on that part of their ultimate holding.
How many, what percentage of lessees purchase the vehicle?
I can't answer that question.
But you have certain leases that balloon at the end, that say after 3 years, it's yours for $600 or something, or you're obligated to buy it.
Almost all lease agreements, and I'm not going to say 100%, but certainly almost all lease agreements have an give the lessee the absolute right to buy the vehicle. And frankly, they generally can usually buy it during the term of the lease as well as at the end of the lease. And I think that, you know, that's the distinction. Again, we're talking about why this should apply to buyers and not lessees. Well, it should apply to buyers because buyers own the car. And lessees don't. I mean, if we're concerned about consumer protection, that's softened to some degree by the fact that if the lessee doesn't like the vehicle, they can give it back. So, I mean, if we want a reason, perhaps, why Congress would decide to cover purchasers and not cover lessees, I think there's a possible reason, because lessees can give the car back if they don't want to, whereas buyers are stuck with it. So perhaps buyers should have additional remedies.
Didn't Peterson try to rescind the contract in this case?
She did try to revoke her acceptance of the vehicle. It's our position, and this...
Well, how does she give it back if you can't give it back that way?
Well, she could at the end of her lease term, not during the term of the lease.
And so during the term of the lease, you're stuck with it?
That is correct.
What was the term?
It was a 4-year lease.
Counsel, is it your position that under this act, it is not a written warranty because it's not in connection with the sale?
Because the lease was not issued in connection with the sale to a buyer for purposes other than resale. That is correct.
You're saying the lease was not issued in connection with the sale as opposed to the warranty?
I apologize. I misspoke.
You mean the warranty was not issued in connection with the sale?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, earlier in your arguments, you transposed the word connection with conjunction. And you said it wasn't a written warranty because it wasn't issued in conjunction with the sale. Those words mean different things to me, connection with and conjunction. Connection with being broader term, arguably, than within the co-joining. You know, conjunction means co-joining with the sale. How do you define the term connection?
That issue is a tough one to answer, and I think the point of that question, I think, is very well taken, because what happens if she leases it on the lease agreement from the dealership and the dealership assigns it the next day? Sells it to the bank the next day? Does that sale constitute a sale? Or does that warranty then become a warranty that was issued in connection with the sale?
I mean, arguably, and in connection with can mean in relation to, you know.
We would concede that if at the time that the Peterson leases the document, if North Shore Bank has already agreed to purchase the vehicle, and if the only reason that the dealership is leasing the vehicle because they know that it's been approved for sale to North Shore Bank, and this is essentially all one transaction, we would concede that that sale would be made in conjunction with the issue of the warranty.
In connection with.
We would still believe, however, that that sale is not a sale to a buyer for purposes other than resale, but we would concede that that is a sale in connection, or the warranty is issued in connection with the sale.
Aren't there disputed issues of material fact in this matter?
We discussed this briefly earlier, and the problem arises because the complaint states that the lessor is the bank, whereas the lease itself states that the dealership is the bank, and we don't know what the time frame is. It's not in the record as to when the sale occurred with North Shore Bank. I think that is a problem, and I think that does get to this issue of is it in connection with. If it's months later, arguably it's not. But if it's all essentially the same transaction, arguably it is. And we don't know that fact. I do think that this court can make some decisions in this case. For example, this court can decide whether the sale to the bank, if it's made in connection with this whole transaction, is that a sale to a buyer for purposes other than resale? I think the court can still give us some guidance on that issue. And if they decide, if you all decide that it needs to
be let me ask you a question about public policy. From public policy perspective, why should a lessee receive less protection than a buyer?
I think because the buyer owns the car and the lessee doesn't.
But during the period of the lease, you've already indicated that the lessee has possession and control of the car, and you've already, in this case, argued that the buyer can't rescind or return that vehicle during the term of the lease.
Mm-hmm.
So at least for a four-year period, this lessee is stuck with that vehicle. Why should that lessee not have the same protections?
Well, what does the warranty require Volkswagen to do? It requires Volkswagen to repair the vehicle for free. And they've done that. They argue that they weren't able to successfully repair it, and Volkswagen certainly will do whatever it takes as it goes forward to repair the vehicle for free. That's all the warranty requires.
But if it's not repaired, then the warranty hasn't been met.
And then they can sue for breach of warranty under the Uniform Commercial Code. They could pursue it if the car is in bad enough condition to constitute a lemon. They can sue under the Truth in Lending Act. They can sue for breach of contract. They can sue for a whole host of other remedies if they want.
Get me a lawyer.
Pardon me?
They don't get attorney fees.
Under the Truth in Lending,
lemon.
Under the Truth in Lending Act, they do as well. They do not under the UCC.
Contract or UCC.
Right, but they do under the Lemon Law and under the Truth in Lending Act. But other than that, and under the Mag-Moss Act, as we discussed, I think, about a month ago, the damages are the same as the UCC. So the only difference between suing under the Mag-Moss and the UCC is the ability to collect attorney's fees. However, you can collect attorney's fees under the Lemon Law and under the Truth in Lending Act. So we're not harming Ms. Peterson in any way by saying she can't pursue under the Mag-Moss Act. We're merely forcing her to pursue under the appropriate mechanisms.
Is there a definition of sale?
It is undefined by the Act. There are some state law definitions, and essentially sale means the transfer of title. Again, we're presuming the sale to North Shore Bank, and we're presuming that North Shore Bank obtains the title to the vehicle. And if that's the case, then that would be the sale.
So if you looked to state law for a definition of sale, would you incorporate into that, other than for purposes of resale, as an exception?
If I may respond. The statute says it has to be a sale to a buyer for purposes other than resale. So I would incorporate that for purposes other than resale to the definition of sale.
That talks about buyer, but doesn't necessarily talk about sale. I mean, you're equating these two.
Sure. If someone buys the vehicle, I think that necessarily means that there was a sale. If someone bought it, someone had to sell it. So I think that is appropriate.
Is the bank a supplier under 4? Bank could be in the business of doing these leases.
Yeah. There is a case on that dealing with motorhomes where a dealer buys 600 motorhomes, and the court addresses that question. And I can't answer that at this point without reviewing that case and without reviewing the definition specifically.
Right. So this bank was not the agency's or the dealer's financing person for these transactions, and it was the buyer's bank, right?
When the dealership finances the cars from Volkswagen,
right,
there's no evidence that they use North Shore Bank in order to finance that transaction. Out of personal experience, I can state that I don't believe that that is the case, but there's no evidence either way as to who the dealership uses.
North Shore has a regular leasing business, does it not?
I would assume that they do, but again, the record does not say.
In fact, don't they even have a website where they lease vehicles on a regular basis?
I can't answer that question.
And when you look at the definition of supplier, it says engaged in the business of making a consumer product, direct or indirectly, available. It doesn't say transfer title. Well,
if I may, again, I'm over time. We're talking about whether or not Peterson could have decided to sue North Shore Bank under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, and we certainly would encourage her to do so if she thought that was an appropriate remedy. Again, but we're talking about, I think it's perfectly clear that there are numerous remedies available to her. We're not harming her in any way if we take this one away from her.
Okay. Thank you, counsel, and you have several minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Cohn.
Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Scott Cohen. I represent the plaintiff, Jamie Peterson. Thank you for the opportunity for appearing here today, Barak Vice. First of all, I'd like to start with a point that Mr. Cochran made last as he concluded his initial argument, that we will not be harming Ms. Peterson if we take away her rights under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. Although I believe that this is a red herring and, frankly, is not something that should form the basis of this Court's decision, but rather this Court should look at the plain language of the Act and the application of facts to the Act, I would like to address it because I think it is important. First of all, Mr. Cochran brought up a number of different avenues that Ms. Peterson might have to be able to pursue should she not have any rights under the Warranty Act. I'll address them one at a time.
Counselor, I would prefer you not do that, because if she's got 95 rights and she has 96 with this one, we're going to give her the 96th. So it doesn't matter one whit whether she's got a ton of rights. Our question is, does she have this one?
And I appreciate that, because that is how I feel. She does have this right. Mr. Cochran and Volkswagen takes the position, essentially, that we should be disregarding the facts that are pled in this case, that we should just accept as absolute Volkswagen's position as to how this transaction took place. Volkswagen takes the position, and Mr. Cochran indicated that he doesn't believe the facts are important. They're critically important. The facts in this case, as the way that they were pled, demonstrate that under the plain language of the Act, Ms. Peterson is a consumer in at least two respects. The Act defines a consumer, and as you have seen and have the materials in front of you, in three different ways. Congress would not have drafted three different definitions if it meant to simply stop at the term buyer. In terms of statutory construction, it is a principle that has been recognized by this Court as well as by federal courts when you interpret a statute, that you should not be reading sections of a statute that would render them superfluous. If we accept Volkswagen's interpretation, the definition of a transferor, of a transferee, the definition of anyone entitled by the warranty to enforce the warranty would be rendered illusory. Looking at the plain language of the statute, under the plain language of the statute, we must simply show that if I attempt to pigeonhole Ms. Peterson under a prong 2 or category 2 consumer as a transferee, any person to whom such product is transferred during the duration of an implied or written warranty applicable to the product. The plain language of the Act doesn't say covered by a written warranty as defined by the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. It says applicable to the product. There is no question that we have pled in our complaint that Ms. Peterson took possession of this vehicle after her lease began, and during the time that she took possession of the vehicle was covered by the duration of the factory warranty. We plead that in paragraphs 9, 11, 29 of our complaint. In several places, we're pleading facts to show that, in fact, this took place. When Ms. Peterson took the vehicle, she took with it every responsibility that goes with having a new vehicle: maintenance, upkeep, repair, taking the vehicle.
Was there a service contract involved in this case?
There was not. Taking the vehicle in for warranty repairs, paying for the vehicle, paying sales tax for the vehicle. She was paying approximately $16 a month in sales tax for the vehicle. She had every right to use this vehicle, and short of having the title to the vehicle, this vehicle was transferred to her. To suggest that a transferee must be only someone who has been given a gift or somebody who has received the vehicle in probate is something that is not supported by any case law, not something that is supported by the plain language of the Act. Rather, The case law indicates, and the Court of Appeals in this case correctly indicated, that a transferee must be somebody short of a purchaser, something a little bit less. Here we have facts to support that. We have pled these facts. Volkswagen is attempting to ignore the facts that we have pled.
Mr. Cohen, how do you – I just want to follow your argument here. How do you read written – do you read written warranty as including the definition that's applied in paragraph 6 of the chapter as being applicable to the product, or do you see written warranty as any written warranty?
The statute doesn't specifically indicate that it must be a written warranty as defined under subsection 6. It says a written warranty that's applicable to the product.
But it also defines written warranty.
It does. And it's our position, and I will get to that, it's our position that even if this Court requires that the warranty be a warranty that satisfies subsection 6, that we still have pled sufficient facts that support that. So either way you look at it, I believe that Ms. Peterson would still satisfy her burden of pleading a cause of action as a consumer under either Category 2 or Category 3. With respect to Category 3, and this is something that the Court of Appeals did not address because the Court of Appeals ended its inquiry at subsection 2 or at Category 2. Category 3 is a catch-all provision, an even broader provision than a buyer or transferee. The plain language of a Category 3 consumer is any other person who is entitled by the terms of the warranty or under applicable state law to enforce against the warrantor the obligations of the warranty. Whether we look at the warranty as something that's enforceable under state law or a warranty that on its face is something that is enforceable by Ms. Peterson, either way, you have a consumer defined under Category 3. You have somebody who can bring a claim under Category 3.
Now, the statute says written warranty, that's a consumer too. It just talks about warranty in Consumer 3.
Under Prong 3, that's all it talks about is the warranty. It doesn't say written warranty. It doesn't say written warranty applicable to the product. It says the warranty. The Volcker Court, in recognizing that it's not even necessary for a Prong 3 consumer to meet the definition of a written warranty, hinged its analysis on just that fact, that the plain language of the definition of a consumer does not directly require that the Prong 3 Category 3 consumer have a written warranty as defined by the Warranty Act. As I've indicated, though, I believe I will still be able to demonstrate that we have such a warranty.
Now, 6A says that the written affirmation is made in connection with the sale to a consumer product by a supplier, not Volkswagen necessarily, any supplier. And if the bank is a supplier, then it could have fit under 6A except for the problem of the word sale. Is sale used elsewhere in the statute?
Sale is used also in the definition under subsection B, and it's really our contention that we have a subsection B warranty that is in effect. And the reason being, when the Act was drafted, the definition of a written warranty, it has two elements to it. Subsection A is really restating what would be a warranty under the commercial code, a warranty that relates to the quality of the goods. Subsection B, any undertaking in writing in connection with a sale by a supplier of a consumer product to refund, repair, or replace, that is something that's unique to Magnuson Moss. In fact, the Volcker Court, the Seventh Circuit, recognized in its decision, aside from also commenting that leases were covered by the Act, the Volcker Court recognized that under the UCC, the type of warranty that's given by a car manufacturer to repair or replace is not even a UCC warranty. So that is why subsection B is particularly important and why I think we must focus on subsection B. And under subsection B, all we must show is that there was an undertaking in writing in connection with a sale by a supplier of a consumer product to refund, repair, or replace, or take other remedial action with respect to the product in the event that the product fails to meet the specifications set forth in the undertaking, and then which written affirmation, promise, or undertaking becomes part of the basis of the bargain between a supplier and buyer for purposes other than resale of the product. We pled facts that directly support that definition. So even if this Court disagrees with the Volcker Court, the Seventh Circuit's interpretation of whether or not you need to have a warranty as defined by the Act. We pled facts unlike the plaintiff in Volcker, unlike the plaintiff in the Dicentio case before the New York Court of Appeals. We pled facts that support that definition. And the facts that we pled...
Mr. Cohen, let me, if I might, just ask you for a moment to tell me a little bit about the proceeding that went on here. So I'm a little bit disturbed by that. It's my understanding that you brought this action, that there is then a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. Is that correct?
That's correct.
There were affidavits that were presented, apparently, as part of the process.
In response to the motion to dismiss, we attached an affidavit from the lease manager of the dealership that arranged to lease this vehicle. To demonstrate to this court, or to demonstrate to the trial court at the time, and now to demonstrate to this court, that this is more than just artful pleading. This is not simply a matter of the plaintiff pleading facts that satisfy the plain language of the statute, okay, but rather we're pleading the transaction as it actually took place.
All right, now let me stop you there. Did the judge exclude the affidavit?
I don't believe the judge considered the affidavit at all, but did not officially or formally exclude the affidavit.
Right. Now, as I read the statutes, and I'm looking at 802.06 paren 2 paren B, under those circumstances, the court shall treat the matter as a motion for summary judgment. And I heard your opponent say earlier that there were genuine issues of material fact here, that there were factual determinations that were important here. Do you agree with that?
I think that there are factual determinations that are important, and if this matter was treated as a summary judgment motion, then Volkswagen would have failed miserably to meet its burden on the one element that it's really focusing its attention. And what Volkswagen is attempting to focus its attention on is simply the fact that the warranty was not issued in connection with a sale for purposes other than resale. It seems to me that Volkswagen has conceded the point that if this transaction took place in the manner that we have pled, that the lease and the sale of the vehicle took place essentially simultaneously, that we have a warranty issued in connection with the sale.
Well, if the court didn't treat this as a summary judgment motion, and there are genuine issues of material fact involved, then shouldn't this court be sending this case back to the circuit court and asking the circuit court to act in accordance with the statute?
I think that this is a pleading motion, that we pled all of the elements necessary to state a cause of action, that our pleading is in conformity with other courts that have addressed this issue, whether it be the appellate court in Illinois, Decalita versus Nissan, whether it be a court in the state of Ohio, Sabuski versus Mercedes-Benz, whether it be the court in Mangold versus Nissan, another court out of the state of Illinois. We pled the cause of action. It is a cause of action that I believe we can prove. So sending it back for a determination as to these factual issues is something that should take place after every time a plaintiff properly pleads the cause of action.
Well, but the issue is, did you properly plead a cause of action? You want this court, I think, to say you fall in under consumer 2 or 3 and that 6A doesn't knock you out. And therefore, all you have to do is go back and prove that. But why should this court say that when we don't know if it was simultaneous, in conjunction, or in connection? Do you know what I'm saying?
I understand. The reason why this court should do that is because as the plaintiff, as the party that pled the cause of action, this court is required to give deference to our allegations. This court is required to accept as true the facts that we've pled. There has been absolutely no conflict from the argument made by Volkswagen in terms of what our allegations are. And let me address that. Volkswagen was trying to cloud the issue by suggesting that the leasing company, North Shore Leasing, is not a lessor because the lease describes the lessor as the dealership. First of all, the fact that we labeled in our complaint the leasing company as a lessor as a means of not having to say North Shore auto leasing every single time was for the purposes of the ease of drafting the complaint and serves no relevance whatsoever to the plain language interpretation of the statute. When looking at the plain language interpretation of the statute, we must simply be looking for the warranty issued in connection with a sale for purposes other than resale. So even if we take away the labeling of North Shore Auto Leasing as a lessor and just call them North Shore Auto Leasing, we pled in our complaint that North Shore Auto Leasing bought this vehicle after and contemporaneous to the same time that Ms. Peterson said she was going to lease it. And at the time that they bought the vehicle, they received the factory warranty from Volkswagen. Why is that any different than every transaction that takes place between any car dealership and any retail purchaser, whether it be a business, a leasing company, or a consumer? When you buy a new car, you get a warranty. To plead that in our complaint is not exactly far-fetched. And it's something that's supported by the lease itself. In the lease in paragraph 14, it talks about the assignment of the warranty to the consumer. We pled in our complaint that the leasing company, when they bought this vehicle, that they bought it for the purpose other than resale. They bought it to lease it to Ms. Peterson. This is something that Volkswagen attempts to refute by suggesting that simply because there is a purchase option in the contract, that must be the reason why that North Shore Auto Leasing bought this car. They bought it with the express intent of selling, they bought the car with the express intent for purposes other than resale. What is that supported by? There is absolutely no support to that proposition whatsoever. We have pled facts that support our allegation conclusively. To suggest that simply because North Shore Auto Leasing, at the end of this lease, after they've received $15,000, might be required to sell the car to Ms. Peterson is the reason that they ultimately bought it, does not make sense. And it would lead to an absurd result. And here's why. First of all, North Shore Auto Leasing bought a car for $20,000 knowing that 4 years later is going to be worth $11,000. It's going to depreciate by almost half. What company is going, or any entity for that matter, buys a car other than, say, a collectible automobile, or maybe a Porsche, or a certain Mercedes? What company buys an automobile for the purpose of reselling it? That implies that you're going to be making a profit off of it reselling it. This vehicle depreciated by approximately half of its value. That aside, if we accept that proposition as the reason why they bought it, we will at the same time be eliminating everyday purchasers of automobiles from the ability to bring a claim under the Act if we require that the definition of a written warranty be met.
What should our opinion say if it turns out to be favorable to you? Just outline that.
What this Court, I believe, should say is that plaintiffs' well-pled allegations, when accepted as true, plead a cause of action under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act by laying out in at least two manners that the plaintiff is a consumer under the Act, that the plaintiff has pled that the vehicle was transferred to her during the duration of a written warranty and that that allegation must be accepted as fact, that the plaintiff has pled that she was entitled to enforce the warranty by tendering the vehicle for repair on numerous occasions where the manufacturer performed repairs and allowed her to enforce the warranty. That plaintiff has pled the statutory definition of a written warranty as well by pleading facts that this particular warranty was issued in connection with a sale for purposes other than resale by the leasing company, and that leasing company bought the car from the selling dealer. The selling dealer then in turn leased the vehicle to Ms. Peterson, a transaction that happened simultaneously. That is what I believe that this Court should indicate in its holding, and I think that this Court would be in good stead with every court subsequent to the dissentio court that has addressed this issue.
But what if it turns out it's not simultaneous? Do you then lose at the trial court?
If it's not simultaneous, I still don't believe that we're going to lose at the trial court based upon the Volcker Court's interpretation. The Volcker Court's interpretation requires simply that you are able to enforce the warranty under the Act. And I don't necessarily believe that based upon the Seventh Circuit's interpretation, which I agree with, that pursuant to the plain language of the definition of a transferee or anyone entitled to enforce the warranty, that it be defined as a written warranty. That's not something that the Act specifically says. So based upon the Seventh Circuit's interpretation, I still don't think that there would be a problem with respect to that determination. However, I am not at all concerned that this transaction did not happen simultaneously. It did. Every one of these lease transactions that I've ever come across, and this is supported by a summary judgment case, Cohen versus American General out of the Northern District. In fact, that was the seminal case post-Dicentio. In that case, in that summary judgment case, there was evidence presented by the owner of the leasing company who said, the owner of Mr. Leasing, who said, we buy the vehicles only because we have somebody who's interested in leasing it, where we're going to collect the lease payments from them, and we're going to make our profit off of the lease. Down the road, we might resell it. But the reason that we actually buy this vehicle is as soon as we get notification from the dealership that the dealership has somebody on the hook interested in purchasing it. It is at that moment in time that every leasing manager at every dealership will tell you, and this is what I believe that the evidence would show if given the opportunity, they will tell you that they need approval from the finance company before they can simply put somebody into a lease. And that approval carries with it an assignment. That's on the face of the lease agreement itself. This lease agreement itself, at the very top of it, says, with assignment to North Shore Bank. This assignment is something that the United States Supreme Court, in the case of Ford Motor Credit versus Seance, a case that we said in our briefs, recognizes that the assignment happens simultaneous. In that case, we had a party trying to bring a claim under the Truth in Lending Act, and it required that we have somebody who was a creditor as defined by the Act, and the retail installment contract defined the creditor as the dealership. What the court said was is that would be elevating form over substance to suggest that Ford Motor Credit is not a creditor, because at the very moment that they agreed to accept that contract, they also agreed to buy the product and fund the transaction. The United States Supreme Court has said this transaction happened simultaneous. And I think that in the context of a lease agreement, facts would bear that out as well. I am not concerned about that. The affidavit that we attached in the response to the motion to dismiss, if this is treated as summary judgment, that affidavit bears that out as well. The affidavit from Mr. Weib indicates that the transaction happened simultaneously, that this vehicle, after it was leased to, or after he had somebody interested in leasing it, that's when he talks to somebody at the financial institution. Then the financial institution says, we'll go ahead and buy it. Then the transaction takes place and all the paperwork is filled out.
What evidence do you have that Congress intended to apply Magnuson-Moss to leases?
The plain language of the statute. And in light of the fact that in terms of interpreting statutes, the United States Supreme Court in the Rusella versus United States case indicates that unless the statute is ambiguous, there's no reason to be looking to the legislative history. And a clear, unambiguous statute on its face should prevail over the legislative history, unless the legislative history is clearly contrary. We do not have, and when you look at the legislative history to the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, you will not see, but for in one place, any discussion of leased vehicles or leased products. The language that Volkswagen relies upon from the Dicentio opinion of the New York Court of Appeals from Professor Fairfax Leary is very misleading. When Professor Fairfax Leary, and this is the only language that you see in the legislative history with respect to the issue of whether or not lease products will be covered. When Professor Fairfax Leary was testifying before Congress in 1973, 2 years before the Act's ultimate enactment, Professor Leary spoke of the definition of a consumer as the first buyer at retail. And then he concludes, thus, leasing is not covered. He wasn't even referring to the pending version of the bill that was on the floor of Congress, which had a three-pronged definition, including transferees and anyone entitled to enforce the Act. So when Professor Leary spoke before Congress and said leasing is not covered, his interpretation was based upon an earlier bill that was then later expanded by Congress. You will not find anywhere in the legislative history that any member of Congress ever rejected Professor Leary's comments, or frankly, ever even discussed them at all. There was no need whatsoever for Congress to do that. The reason being, the Act on its face is clear. That the
why should lessees receive the same protections as purchasers under the Act?
The state of Wisconsin has adopted Article 2A of the Uniform Commercial Code. The official comment to Article 2A of the Uniform Commercial Code indicates that lessees should be entitled to the same rights as a purchaser, that it would not It would not make sense to treat them any differently when they have essentially the same responsibilities. The state of Wisconsin recognizes that. But aside from just that, the typical lease transaction that we have in this case carries with it all of the attributes of a sale. And prior to the dissenting court's analysis, you had courts throughout the country that were looking to try to pigeonhole a consumer into that prong one or category one of the definition of a consumer and trying to make all of these lessees buyers. And the way that they would do that, and I speak of the Henderson decision out of the state of Pennsylvania and then the Freeman versus Hubco Leasing Georgia Supreme Court decision, the way that these courts did that was by recognizing that a lease transaction is very much analogous to a sale, carries with it the same attributes. You have the obligation to, and as I mentioned before, to take care of the vehicle in every respect. And what those courts also recognized was that if you have that purchase option, you also have a vehicle, you have a transaction that is essentially a retail installment sales contract with a balloon payment at the end. That is why those courts treated those transactions in that manner. I don't believe that it's necessary that this court make that finding. The Court of Appeals in Illinois did. Even though it was not the argument that was raised by the plaintiff, the Court of Appeals in Illinois in the Decalita versus Nissan case said, we're still going to find the plaintiff also as a Category 1 consumer, for the reason being that a lease is essentially the same thing in this context, is essentially the same thing as a retail installment sale.
What is a consumer product?
A consumer product is actually defined by Congress. Under Section 2301, subparagraph 1, the term consumer product means any tangible personal property which is distributed in commerce and which is normally used for personal, family, or household purposes, including any such property intended to be attached or installed in any real property without regard to whether it is so attached or installed. Courts throughout the country that have looked at automobiles have recognized automobiles are consumer products. I don't think Volkswagen even makes the argument that we don't have a consumer product here.
What I'm getting at is that the term consumer product goes way, way beyond automobiles. Have you ever brought a Magnuson Moss lawsuit on a consumer product other than an automobile or a motor vehicle?
All the time. We bring consumer product claims under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act for televisions, refrigerators, motorhomes. It could be many things other than simply automobiles, which the Lemon Law pertains to automobiles. This Court's holding should be recognizing that under the Warranty Act, the test should be based upon whether or not it's a consumer product, not whether or not there's other adequate remedies. We have here met the plain language of the definitions, all three definitions that are at issue. The main definition that is at issue that Volkswagen focuses its attention on is that we don't have a sale for purposes other than resale. They make that argument based upon the dissentio court's acceptance of that particular finding, not based upon any sort of testimony or hearings, but rather based upon the dissentio court's presumption. In fact, that is the language from the dissentio court, presumptively.
So would all the attorney fees provisions apply irrespective of what the consumer product was?
It would. Section 2310D of the Act allows a consumer to bring a claim against the supplier of any consumer product. So the attorney's fees provisions apply to all consumer products.
Mr. Cohen, what was the duration of the warranty in this case?
It was a 4-year warranty, and what is interesting is that...
When did it start?
It started, according to our pleading, on March 27th of 1999, which is the same time that Ms. Peterson took possession of the vehicle.
When did the lease term run?
It would run then March 27th of 2003.
So the lease term was during the same period as the warranty term?
The warranty term the warranty term is a 2-year warranty. The lease term is a 4-year warranty. I misspoke.
Lease term is 4 years.
Now, lease term is 4 years.
4 years. The warranty term is 2 years. They both started March 27th of 99.
That's correct.
And Mr. Cochran, I believe, indicated that there's nothing in this record to indicate when the actual sale took place between North Shore and Volkswagen.
By making that argument, he's disregarding our complaint. We suggest in the complaint, specifically in paragraph 5 of our complaint, prior to or contemporaneous to plaintiff's lease of the Beetle, seller sold the Beetle to lessor for valuable consideration. We plead directly in our complaint that this is happening simultaneous to the same time the plaintiff leased the vehicle, which was on March 27th of 1999. His contention disregards the allegation in our complaint. I see my time is running out. There's one final point that I'd like to conclude with, and it's a point that Chief Justice Abrahamson made when you asked Mr. Cochran what would happen if Ms. Peterson would have bought this vehicle from North Shore as opposed to leasing it. If we accept North Shore's interpretation, what would have happened is that we would have had a consumer who bought the vehicle without a written warranty that she could enforce. Volkswagen's interpretation of the law would suggest that once that warranty is not a written warranty, that you cannot later go back and use it as a written warranty under the Act. So even if you have a subsequent buyer, not a lessee, a buyer, who buys the product with the same warranty that was originally issued, that subsequent buyer is not going to be able to use that product as something that would be covered under the Magnuson Moss Warranty Act.
Mr. Cohen, if I may, Chief, one last question.
Certainly.
Is the terms, are the terms in connection with the sale defined under the Magnuson Moss Act?
It is not defined under the Act.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Cochran?
Thank you. I only have a couple of points. Mr. Cohen continues to use the language, plain language of the statute, plain language of the statute. Nowhere in the statute does it say lessees are covered. That is, we're not talking about the plain language here. And Mr. Cohen's argument is disingenuous. The statute quite clearly does not plainly encompass lessees. Additionally, I find it interesting Mr. Cohen notes specifically that in the legislative history of this case, the issue of whether or not lessees would be covered is addressed exactly once. And it's addressed by Professor Leary. And Professor Leary states, I quote, leasing is not covered. If that's the only time that lessees, or the issue of whether or not lessees are covered came up, if it came up once, and the one time it came up, the only testimony is that they're not covered, I read that to read that the legislative intent is quite clear that there was no intent to cover lessees.
Mr. Cochran, wasn't that testimony with respect to a prior piece of legislation?
It is referred to the testimony was for a precursor bill. The Dicintio court still found that testimony to be important as it pertains to this act.
Was there any change in the definition of consumer from the precursor bill to this bill?
I cannot answer that definitively, but I do not believe that there was, and I think the Dicintio court states that there was no change in the definition. And that's why they find that testimony to be persuasive. And the only, as you certainly know, the reason that it is the precursor bill is because it was passed in a subsequent Congress. It wasn't passed in the same 2-year session of Congress, but it is essentially the same legislation and the same bill that was eventually passed. The other thing I need to comment on is, again, Attorney Cohen states that our interpretation of the statute reads out the second and third category of consumers, and that's simply not the case. Category 1 is a buyer. Category 2, a transferor who takes possession of the vehicle
during the duration of the implied or written warranty. Someone buys a vehicle, there's a sale, the person's buying it for the purpose of driving it, they're not buying it for the purpose of resale. They eventually give the vehicle as a gift to their son or daughter.
Mr. Cochran, if I can, it doesn't say at the same time of the sale. It says in connection with the sale.
Excuse me?
As I read the statute doesn't state that the sale has to be simultaneous with the warranty. The warranty has to be in connection with the sale. Is that what the statute says?
Issued in connection with the sale. That's
right. And then the other thing is other than for purposes of resale. Well, if there are additional purposes other than resale, I think you're reading resale to say any time resale may be involved, that covers it. But it says for purposes other than resale, there's other purposes involved here. There's the lease of the vehicle, is there not? That the lease may include a resale at the end, but there are additional purposes other than the resale, right?
That is an argument that would be made by the plaintiff in this case. However, that understanding has been, or that argument has been refuted by both the New York Court of Appeals in Nicentio and the Seventh Circuit in Volcker. Both of those courts, which I believe are the two most prestigious courts to look at this issue to date, both of those courts have said specifically that the sale of the vehicle to a bank when the lessee has the absolute right to purchase that vehicle is not a sale for the purposes other than resale. I understand your argument that, well, they're buying it to lease it and then to sell it. And I understand that, but that's not the conclusion reached.
Where they can make money, right?
But that's not the conclusion reached by the Dicentio Court, and that's not the conclusion reached by the Volcker Court.
But as a practical matter, that's the only way the bank can make money, right?
No, you
can't make money if the vehicle depreciates. If you're only doing it to sell it, and you're going to sell it 4 years later, you're not making money. You make money by the money that's coming in during the term of the lease.
The lessee could buy the car the day after she leases it. She can buy the car under the terms of the lease at any time. And that amount that she would have to buy it for would be more than the amount that the bank paid for it. So it's not necessarily through lease payments and depreciation that North Shore Bank would make money. If Ms. Peterson would buy the car the day after she leased it, North Shore Bank would make money.
Ernie von Schlehdorn, did his dealership buy the car from Volkswagen, or was it just a pass-through, or what?
The facts aren't in the record to answer that question. So, continuing, a Category 2 consumer is someone who was given the vehicle by a parent, something like that, when the parent buys it. So we're not reading out Category 2. What's a Category 3 consumer? In Illinois, there is no privity required for there to be, excuse me if I may continue.
Yes, of course, but keep it short.
I will. In Illinois, there's no requirement that there be privity for there to be an implied, for a lessee in order for them to bring an implied warranty claim against the manufacturer. So in Illinois, a Category 3 consumer would be a lessee because, as the Volcker Court says, a lessee does not have to be in privity with the manufacturer to bring an implied warranty. In Wisconsin, that's not the case. But again, that's an example of someone who is a Category 3 consumer. So all three definitions are still important, even under our interpretation. In closing, the bottom line is, even given what's alleged in the complaint, is the sale to the bank a sale for purposes other than resale? And the answer to that is no. When that bank has the absolute obligation to sell it, then that sale is not a sale for purposes other than resale. When there's no sale for purposes other than resale, there's no written warranty under the Act. And when there's no written warranty under the Act, a lessee can't be a consumer under Definitions 2 and Definitions 3. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you, Mr. Cochran. Thank you, Mr. Cohn, for our second argument on this statute since our September beginning. So with that, we close this hearing, 03-0955, Jamie Peterson versus Volkswagen of America. The court will meet in the conference room at 3:15. Thank you. We are in recess until tomorrow morning for oral argument at 9:45.